Hi, namaste, welcome. Welcome to The Thread of Dharma, Weaving Your Whole Self into Your Life's Work. I'm really, really excited, that is not even the word, and honored to be with you and have you all here to experience this, having it all just have come together over the course of this year and over the course of this last month. So I'm delighted to share. I am Rebecca Preen. My spiritual name is Rama Devi. So some of you who know me that way, you and other, those of you who don't know me that way may hear some of you address me as that. This is actually a preview call for a larger, what has become a larger offering called the Thread of Dharma Integration Intensive. So info about that at the end, and if you find yourself interested, then we can chat. I would love to do that. I am going to guide you through an experience today using sacred sound and sacred art to reconnect to your innate core talents, attune to the energy of your dharma, your soul's path, and integrate all the parts of yourself and your experience immediately, organically, and effortlessly. So, as we begin, I want you to take a moment and write down what you know right now about what and how you'd like to integrate the various parts of yourself into your life's work. And if there's a challenge that you keep coming up against, jot that down too. We tend to run into the same pattern of things or find ourselves at the same stopping point or wall or, you know, fork in the road again and again. Okay, so if you've had a chance to just quickly jot down your awareness of where you're at and working with right now, I want to remind you that there is a PDF handout and that we will be using the image in it during this call and this experience. So if you have not received that or don't have it in front of you, it is available in a few different places. If you are on my email list, it was sent out this morning in an email, and there's a link there that you can click, and it will download the PDF directly. There is a link in two different posts in the Facebook group. If you are in the Facebook group, one post from yesterday and one from today, I have a link there. And lastly, it is available on the recording page. So once this recording goes up, there's a button right beneath where the recording is. So if you're listening to the recording, it's right there for you. If you're here live with me, thank you. And you can go to ompreneur.com/thread-of-dharma-recording. There are dashes in between those words. So thread-of-dharma, that's D-H-A-R-M-A, dash recording. And you will find it there. Okay. So, I am not a big fan of long personal stories on calls like these. I am that person who wants the speaker to get on with it, to get to what I showed up to the call for. But here, I think I am going to spend a little bit more time on my story because I want to share it with you as the phases of my quest to integrate all of myself into my work in the world and use that as examples of different forms of integration. So I'm going to tell the story first, I'm going to give you an overview of the different forms I've identified, then tell the story so you've got some real-world examples of what those are, and then we're going to go into our experience for you to explore this from an experiential and a meditative and intuitive and spiritual point of view, or to do that work first. I'll explain how I've gotten to that being the most effective, and by that I mean most true, process by way of this whole meandering on my own journey that I've done. So I'm a lawyer. I'm also an artist, writer, a business owner, and a yogi. I was a sensitive artist kid who was enthusiastic and skilled at math and also at English. These diverse sets of interests and talents were encouraged and rewarded when I was a kid, and it was great fun. But as you may have experienced as well, as I went up through school and I graduated into work, this natural curiosity and giftedness was not only no longer treated as an asset, but actively discouraged and relegated into value-laden silos. So they were compartmentalized, and there were value judgments placed on each set. So value judgments about being an artist, value judgments about being a lawyer, value judgments about being analytical, value judgments about being practical, quote, value judgments about being sensitive, value judgments about using your mind to solve problems versus using your emotions versus using your intuition, and how those things wove together. I don't think this is an unusual experience for any of us. We live in a particular culture, both a familial culture and a broader culture, a social culture, an ethnic culture, a religious culture, a culture of our country, respectively. And we're also hardwired a certain way. So we're going to react to whatever that cultural influence is in a particular way, just given how we're constituted. So my experience was that I repeatedly received messaging and advice that I could and should earn and make a career out of one set of these interests, right, and aptitudes, which ultimately became lawyering, and relegate the rest of these interests and aptitudes to my, quote, off hours or my free time, or make them, quote, hobbies. And as I'll share, I did this, right? I took this approach, but it didn't work for me. It left me wanting, and it was a soul-level wanting. It was an ache, a longing, and a feeling of deep loss at the idea that I would not be fully expressed and fulfilled in this way that I was approaching work and life. And frankly, I resented that. It became resentment and anger and depression. And so it's fair to say that for 15 years or more, I went on a quest to figure out how to integrate all of myself, not just into my life, but into my work in the world. That, to me, was essential. That was the missing piece. And less than that, felt like it fell short of being fully actualized. In reflecting upon my experience, I've identified five forms of weaving these disparate and honestly sometimes competing parts of ourselves together into our work. And those are listed on page 2 of your PDF. 1, compartmentalization. 2, topic integration. 3, presence integration. 4, process integration. And lastly, full integration, which I mean to be at least the combination of topic, presence, and process integration. These kind of titles or quote categories or phases are not hierarchical. They're not even necessarily linear. I happen to have experienced them as a process, but you could want and love any of these forms for yourself and have them work for you. And by what I mean by work is have that feeling of deep satisfaction that you know yourself that you're standing fully in yourself and you're doing what you were put here to do or what you came to do. So for each person, this may be different, and there may be cross-pollinations of these and different types of scenarios and integrations that I haven't even identified, that we aren't even aware of yet. And that's why this tantric, this spiritual practice, this energetic practice is so powerful, because it allows you to open up to that ability and the possibility of what is yet unknown. So it opens you to things that the mind cannot yet conceive of, or the mind has limited information on, or is in a set of more rigid thinking around. So how did I go through this experience? What do each of these look like? I said I experienced them as a process. So let me tell you about that. Between college and law school, I was a paralegal, probably no surprise for somebody who became a lawyer. I worked very long hours. And in the few hours I had off, usually late at night into the early morning, this was in the 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. range, I painted and I wrote. And I continued this through law school. And then in law school, I began practicing yoga and meditation. Then, after I graduated, I went to a large firm and I stopped painting and writing. I still tried to keep up the yoga. I still tried to keep up the meditation. But I dropped off all the creative work. And I ended up leaving that firm due to a health crisis. And after that, I spent a full year writing. And that, on the one hand, felt wonderful. So I kind of did that whole seesaw. Right, the pendulum swung one way all the way into, again, a very intense legal environment, and then it swung all the way in the other direction, very my own schedule, very creative, intense time. But during that writing year, there wound up being the dilemma of earning. And so without really understanding or knowing how else I was going to earn, I returned to practicing law. But this time, I was determined that it was not going to eclipse. It could not fully eclipse my creative work like it had at my initial firm at the beginning of my career. And so this began a phase of visible and intentional compartmentalization, right? So I started out in the thing... my interests were in silos, what I did, who I was, right? I compartmentalized it. And one piece of that world or my life didn't know about the other piece. So my yoga people didn't know I was an artist or a lawyer, and the lawyer people didn't know I was a yogi or an artist. But what shifted after this break from practicing law was that I started to be intentional about being visible in it. So they were still separated, but I was just obvious about it. So I took this job at the United States Court of Appeals in Boston, and my boss and the woman who hired me, she knew what I was doing, and it worked in with the position they had available, which was only an 8-month position. So I had 8 months of full-time work, and then I had 4 months off. And I used it to write and to paint. But I lived in Boston on a full year on 8 months' salary. And so after 2 years of that, I decided that that really wasn't going to work out for my living needs, right? That wasn't supporting me in the way that living in a major city required. And so I took pretty much the same job at the United States Courts of Appeal in Atlanta, where I worked full-time, and I went back to kind of my paralegal days in terms of I would get up sometimes before work and paint. I would paint after work. There was artwork, my own artwork, in my office, so I really started allowing my colleagues to see me in that way. I took a yoga teacher training at that point, and they knew they were doing that. And so then when I moved yet again to back into private practice, another large firm, this time in Atlanta, I moved that art in my office with me. And I moved, I was open about that knowledge about being a yogi and that I was a yoga teacher. They were even trying to, my group was trying to convince me to teach them yoga classes. I decided that was not the, in the best interest of me as a member of their team. But you can see what I mean by visible. It's compartmentalized, but so the work is not the same. The time spent is not the same, but it's visible and it's intentional about being visible. And it was always surprising to me that people thought I was so unusual. That lawyers would come in my office and comment on the artwork and then be incredibly surprised that it was me and literally say, that is so unusual, like to have a brain that works that way, like in these two very different capacities. And so I started to become very aware of this tension within me that had always been there, but that I had lived in for so long that I didn't have a framework for it. I didn't have words for it. I knew that there was struggle related to it. I knew there was tension. I knew that there was kind of discomfort and longing, and that was propelling me to seek answers to something. Mostly, what am I going to do, right, that is satisfying and feels whole and that also supports me? And not being satisfied still with the answer of, well, those two things can be different. You know, part of it can support you and this other part can fulfill a different piece and doesn't necessarily have to earn anything as long as you've got that earning piece in place. But that answer, which is so commonly the advice and so commonly still deemed practical and realistic, has never been satisfying to me. I've never been satisfied with stopping at that answer. But this period of time of visible and intentional compartmentalization was very fruitful, actually, for my art, much more so than any creative writing at this point. I painted in the morning and the evening. I participated in several curated art shows. I created my own opening with some other artists. And I did my yoga teacher training and got very involved in a spiritual community in Atlanta. So it was very fruitful in those regards and very satisfying for that reason. And then I was laid off. Okay, so we had the recession. I was doing securities fraud. We settled a lot of cases. Most of the group ended up getting laid off. And I didn't quite know what I was going to do because I really was not enthusiastic about looking for another law job. And at that point in time, I was at an intensive meditation and yoga intensive with my guru, and she said to me, she told me I was living someone else's life, which is a pretty powerful, that was a pretty powerful statement, but it also was justifying in the sense of that my depression, my dissatisfaction somehow felt like it was pointing me in a direction, like it was real, that there was something behind it instead of it just me being a complainer. For example, because the narrative I had in my head was basically, Rebecca, why can't you just be satisfied with what everyone else is? Get a job with your degree, go take care of your life, and then, you know, paint on the weekends and go do your yoga and just live, like just be happy. There was something about this scenario that was not making me happy. In a fundamental way. And if you're here, I am going to guess that you understand that, that there's something deeper driving your motivation, something you can't escape. It's not a matter of surrender or acceptance or, surrender or acceptance. So, again, knowing that I was qualified to practice law and not being quite sure where else to turn, I opened my own practice, but with an intentional integration this time. I combined law and my creativity, my interest in creativity, my fascination with the fact that you can invest yourself in creating something and the law will recognize that as valuable. That fascinated me. And so I opened my own practice, integrating law and creativity into Counsel to Creativity. And I was creative about the way I thought and talked about law. My intention was to serve those who were not served by lawyers because of the lawyer image and the lawyer package and the lawyer language. And so my vision was a clear, friendly, visual language for law. Now, the clear, friendly part was well executed, but the visual language was only partially executed. I actually never got that fully completed or off the ground before I moved on to another phase. And in my own practice, I was free to identify myself as an artist and a yogi and to let clients come to me because they thought that was cool or because they could relate to it or because I was simply a human. And I remember that I wrote a blog post about, you know, how my tattoo relates to my law practice, and basically that was it. Like, I want to own a law practice where I can have a visible tattoo. Like, I don't want to be confined by these other rules. And I began to share these kinds of things, not only about being an artist, but in particular about my yoga practice and the worldview or the understanding of the world and ourselves and ultimately business as part of that through this lens of yoga. And I began to use yoga as a metaphor in talking about law and talking about business. And so this then became another integration. So these are two then topic integrations that I use, law and art, or creativity, and then adding yoga to the mix. But interestingly, during this period of time when I started my practice, or the early years of my practice, I did not paint and I did not write for myself at all. It's like all of my creativity and effort went into this law practice. And then after having seen business through and written about business through this yogic lens, for a little bit, I started a second business. So the first integration was a topic integration in my own business, one business. And then the second phase of that was starting a second business. And that's this business, Ompreneur. And it began by looking at business through the lens of yogic philosophy and practice, and asking what yoga could teach us about how we show up and how we operate business. I wanted to do business differently for myself, but also to help others do it. I wanted to do it more organically and naturally. I wanted it to be fluid to my nature. I didn't want to be overworking all the time, which I did a lot in the early years of my law practice. And I wanted to help others do the same. And that sparked an experiment, which I call my 20% experiment. I identified five interests, and I decided I was going to spend 20% of my time on each one of them, which is like radically different than what anyone tells you to do, right? Most of the time it's pick one and focus on it and you'll be successful. But focusing on something like that so intensely makes me unhappy. It also makes me less effective. I'm going to say a little bit more about that in a minute with another example. So I did this. And then what naturally happened was that these five interests or five areas of focus ended up consolidating down to three. So, and they became my law practice, Ompreneur, and painting. Okay, so at this time I have two small businesses and I'm painting, and I'm not selling them. I'm just doing it for myself. I'm not showing them nothing. And what I began to see was not only did it reduce to three, but a few things happened after this. So just to give you a time frame, I started my law practice in 2009. I started Ownpreneur in 2013. So on about end of 2014, on about 2014, really then in 2015. But I began to witness that law clients began coming to me for who I am rather than what I do. So yes, they know I'm a lawyer. Yes, they knew I could help them on their contracts. Yes, they knew I could help them on their trademarks and copyrights, but they were coming specifically to me as opposed to another lawyer for two key reasons. One, the ability to hold a depth of space for them, to hold that depth of space that allows for deep listening and for transformation for a client. So I started to get feedback that they could feel that and that they wanted that, and they couldn't articulate what was different about me, but they knew that that's why they were there. And these are people who had worked with other lawyers before. And second, the second thing about the who I am versus what I do, second reason they came was the ability to think strategically about how to use their intellectual property for their business and see the thread that tied it together into a coherent model. So they came to me for my ability to hold space, the depth of presence, and my ability to see a thread and use it in their work and use it strategically. So in 2015, I actually redesigned the languaging and the marketing around my law practice to put this in front, because this was behind the scenes. I was leading with all the regular lawyer stuff, lawyer protection, you know, sleep at night, contracts, don't get your stuff stolen, don't worry, all that kind of stuff. And so I flipped it around. And I can send you an example. It's still up. The site's still up. I can send you an example of what that looks like when you take these innate core abilities, just who you are when you're being you yourself, and you put them and you lead with them. And that is what I am identifying as presence integration. Okay? The ability to bring who you are, hold that depth of space for your clients. And that they're coming to you for those intrinsic qualities. At the same period of time, I naturally began to integrate the way I worked also. So what I did on a day-to-day basis into a fluid model, which really, really works for me. And what I mean by fluid is literally moving from one task to another. So I had this office and it had my desk and my whole law set up there. And then it had a yoga mat and an altar, and then it had an art studio, and it was just in a long line. And I would move between these on a single day. I would work in this fluid way. I'd write and I'd paint and I'd talk. And that was my rhythm, write, paint, talk, write, paint, talk. I actually negotiated some of the most challenging contract issues for clients during a pause in painting or immediately after a yoga practice. I would stop when I was stuck on something and I would go to my yoga mat, or I would pick up the brush. And so I stopped that, even the compartmentalization of when I did things and what I did. And that really worked for me. That's part of my, I want to move and I want the variety and I want the flow. So in a way, that was another form of presence integration, in the sense that externally, the way I was conveying my work and the way I was showing up with clients, I was fully present and being who I was, my nature, and the way I was showing up for me and doing my work and being in my business was also in that manner. And those were two really major shifts in 2015 that made everything so much easier and so much more enjoyable I don't know that I really enjoyed practicing law until that phase. But during this time, I had a vision on my yoga mat, of course, right there next to my desk, for Ownpreneur that integrated everything, that took what I was doing even further, that it integrated this presence, that it integrated these yoga practices, that it integrated my love of mantra, Sanskrit mantra, that it integrated my voice. I was getting feedback at this time, too, that my voice, the presence of my voice, the sound of my voice was very powerful for people, that they liked listening to it, that it had an impact on them, which is kind of hilarious, actually, because my voice has been a point of contention. It has been a point of criticism and of self, what's the word? I don't know. Anyway, my voice is it's kind of a sticking point. It's very loud. I get very excited and it gets very loud and literally everyone in the restaurant turns around. So I am that loud talker in the cafe when I'm excited about something, and I'm not trying to annoy people, but it is a constant practice of awareness to speak in a way that preserves the space of the people around me and preserves the kind of integrity of the conversation that I'm having with the person in front of me. That is how loud my voice is, and how resonant it is. And so I've always been self-conscious. That was the word I was looking for. Self-conscious about that, and have been nagged at and prodded and encouraged to work with that and shift it and change it and modulate my voice. So modulating my voice is a constant lifelong practice. And I wondered about integrating that at this period of time. And then lastly, the artwork had always been set aside. So I've got the law practice, I've got Ownpreneur, things are starting to come together. I'm feeling much happier and satisfied, not resenting practicing law. But this artwork is still kind of on the side. That felt like it was going to be okay until I had this moment on the mat. When I knew how this was all going to come together in Ownpreneur, and I knew that sacred art, I knew that sacred geometry was going to be that hinge, right? It was going to be that point that brought things together, that relationship between mantra and sacred geometry, between sound and form, and I just got chills saying it, was going to be the piece that was going to tie it all together for me. So I had this moment of clarity, and I got up, and I wrote this whole document. I wrote an entire kind of business plan, vision. It was like 5 or 8 pages long off of that. All coming, right, of course, from my mind. I have this moment of kind of clarity, download, intuitive download. And then my mind is like, well, we are going to run with this. And I did it, and I showed my mentor, and I showed my mastermind group. And then I set about wanting to make it real. From the standpoint of, now I know, this is great, I know, I can do this, right? I'll take this clarity I just got and I'll plug it into everything I know about business. And no, that is not the way it worked. My mind at that point was still leading the charge. Somehow I thought I could just change the form of what I was going to offer and plug it into everything else that I already knew. And we were off, like it was going to go like crazy. And no, that is not what happened at all. And I've come to believe that this is why. This integration, this level of deep soul integration, demands living it, demands being it, coming from a different place when you are the work that you're offering, or you are your fullest expression of yourself while you're offering your work. Let's put it that way for now. So I had to move from this intellectual approach into a different phase. So I see this vision of this full integration, and I'm thinking, I'm there, this is going to happen. But there were three mini phases. And that is also, I noted these in the PDF at the bottom of that same page, the second page, three phases of awareness and creation. So what I've noticed about this last phase for me is two things. One, there have been three phases of awareness and creation of this fullest expression of my work. And two, the way that it works for me now, the way I approach work and my business and my offerings is in the opposite direction. So let me get more specific. First thing I experienced about this integration was the intuitive hit, right? Then intellectually, I wanted to write it all out, plan it all out. And I did, and I thought, well, this is going to be enough. So I had this intellectual phase with it. But then I had to move into an experiential phase. Let me tell you that nothing happened with that. Nothing. I mean, nothing. I was going around. I was meeting people. I was doing this. I was putting up. I was going to hire the sales coach. I was doing all these very left-brain things, which are all fine. It just wasn't the time for that. And I wasn't listening to the flow. Meanwhile, intuitively, I'm having all these meditations and all these messages about stillness, about seeds, about incubation, about being in the earth. I got the message in one of the sound practices to slow way, way down to a pace that was a third of what I was practicing at. So I'm getting all these intuitive messages about the speed of this growth and of this evolution and what is needed, but my mind thinks it knows. And so nothing happened. In fact, no one could even hear me or see me, and everyone I spoke with, well, they had a different idea about what I should be doing. And I mean, they didn't impose it on me in the sense that I didn't take any action of it on it, but I felt like I was not seen at all. And so none of that ended up moving forward. And I moved into this experiential phase where I had to experience trust in flow first. And I had to reconnect to natural creative cycles and frankly to wonder, right? To the wonder that is the expression of everything in the world, that is divine expression in the world. To really slow down and trust that and to feel wonder and beauty in it. So my husband and I sold nearly everything and we went on a cross-country trip. We went camping, which is really not like me or us, but we did and it was fun. And we moved. And I spent from May to November of last year doing absolutely nothing aimed at growing either business, except opening to the wonder and wisdom of my experience of that and writing about it. And then out of that, and this is the last phase, and we'll move on to our experience. Out of that came what I'm calling a mystic phase. And what I mean by mystic is direct experience of the divine, direct experience of these energetic qualities and forces in the experience, direct experience of God, if you like that word. That direct experience of you being connected in with everything that is so much bigger than you and that your mind can't fathom. So this came about early. I've always had this capacity. I've always, that these are the practices that I do. The mantra practice we're going to do, that's a mystic practice. The art, that's a mystic practice. Again, it is this direct relationship with that which is sacred. It is also knowing yourself as sacred and not separate from that. So this happened first with mantra. I did a mantra offering this year, early on at the turn of the year. And secondly, it has happened with the sacred geometry and now these abstract color vibration paintings, where the wisdom is coming through these practices to me about the work and what it wants to be, when it wants to show up, who it wants to serve, and what I'm to do next. And it comes maddeningly one little piece at a time. So there is no, this is a vision, this is the plan, this is what you're going to do for the next 3 months. It's literally ask a question, sit in silence. Oh, an answer shows up later and it's one piece. And I go, I don't know why I'm doing this. And then in the process of doing it, the answer to my question comes up. And again, each of these things, to offer the mantra and then to offer the painting, and then each time that I take a step or am shown a step, it does show up as an idea. It shows up as a nudge, right, that can then be understood at the level of intellect. So I still have this mystic quality, right? There's still the mystic phase. There's still the experiential phase. And there's still the intellectual phase, but they're not in progressive order. They're almost in opposite order. There's almost a mystic experience and then an experience in the world. And then my intellect can start to understand what I'm supposed to do and how that fits together with the rest of what I've done. And that means I can move forward. So that has been my experience. And lastly, I will say that this call and this larger offering come out of the fact that my experience is that the mystical aspect, going into that deep space of quiet and trusting it, trusting what comes during that time, is the quickest and most surefire way to go. And it is the way that we undercut again and again and again, because it doesn't make any sense. And we're not taught how to work with energies in this way. And we're not taught how to trust ourselves. And if we do trust ourselves, it is in defiance of all, maybe not all, but a lot of well-meaning and concerned and loving advice, which is really other people's fear stepping in front of what we know. So all of this is designed to get us back to what we know and to work with ourselves and to work with the divine and at this more fundamental level, this vibrational level. So before we move into the practice, I want you to take a breath, okay? Because I did a lot of talking, a lot of storytelling. Take a breath and take a moment to reflect and to honor where you are in your own process. Honor what form of integration you're living. Honor what form you're wanting. Honor what you don't know yet. And honor from what experience and wisdom you're leading. Intellectual, experiential, or mystic. and note how that's serving you. We are now going to go deep into your innate talents at a fundamental level. What I mean by innate talent, for example, listening is one of my innate core talents. My voice is another. They're fundamental in that they're intrinsic. I didn't do anything to create them. I didn't do anything to create my ability to listen very, very deeply. I didn't create the volume or resonance of my voice. And I can't do a lot to change their nature. I can't do anything to change their nature. I can only nurture them, bring greater awareness to them, mastery over their forms, or I can let them lay dormant. But there's nothing I can do to erase them. So we're going to ask some questions and access wisdom and get reconnected to your innate core talents, these fundamental levels of who you are. And we'll be using sacred sound and sacred art to do that. And both the sacred sound and the sacred art are at the frequency of Rama. The soul yantra, we'll be using it on, I think it's page 4 of your PDF. And its mantra is on the next page at the top. The mantra is in Sanskrit. For those of you who are not familiar with Sanskrit, Sanskrit is a vibrational language. It has no meaning other than its sound. Its sound is the discerned vibration of specific qualities of the universe. And the soul yantra puts that into visible form. So they work together. One is the sound vibration and one is the color, visible color vibration of these qualities that we are looking to internalize, to call upon within and without of us. So who, what is Rama? Rama is the energy of Dharma, your divine path. A little bit about Rama. In myth, Rama is a prince who is deprived of his rightful throne and cast out into the forest alone. He wanders the forest for 14 years. And at the time of his intended return to reclaim his kingdom, his beloved is kidnapped, and he embarks on a heroic journey to unite with her. It is into this hero's journey, which Rama inspires and guides you, reclaim your soul, light its fire, and commit to its journey. So if you have the soul yantra in front of you, place it so that your eyes can rest upon it comfortably. We're going to gaze at the yantra as we chant our Rama mantra. Just let your eyes move across the painting however they want. You don't need to remain focused on any one spot. You may naturally settle into a gaze on one spot or a portion of the painting, but you don't need to. Okay, if you feel like closing your eyes even to listen and experience the mantra more closely, you are welcome to do that. This is your practice, so go where it leads you. The mantra we will be practicing together is Om Shri Ramaya Namaha. Om Shri Ramaya Namaha. So I'm going to teach it to you. We'll do a little call and response, one syllable or one piece at a time, up to the full mantra. Okay, then we'll do a little settling in and begin our practice. We're going to chant 108 rounds. That's about 8 minutes. So if at any point you want to stop chanting, that is okay also. Mantra can be done out loud, it can be whispered, or it can be done silently. I've also encouraged clients to listen if they simply want to listen to me chanting the mantra. And the idea of the mantra, not even the idea, the actuality of the mantra is that it's going to create a reverberation at this vibration of Rama inside your skull, inside your mouth, inside your throat, your lungs, and that the spoken word also creates a reverberation outside of you. So we are going to resonate our entire being at the frequency of Rantra, that's Rama and Mantra put together, of Rama, your soul's journey, your Dharma. So let's practice this mantra. If you will repeat the syllables after me, Om Shri, Om Shri, Om Shri Ramaya, 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 Om Shri Ramaya, Om Shri Ramaya, Om Shri Ramaya, Namaha, Namaha, Om Shri Ramaya, Namaha, Om Shri Ramaya, Namaha, Om Shri Ramaya, Namaha. When the mantra is chanted, in my lineage, there is an inflection on the second syllable of Ramaya. So when it's sung, it sounds like this. Om Shri Ramaya, Namaha. Om Shri Ramaya, Namaha. Okay, so I will keep count. There's no need for you to attempt to keep count, even if you have a mala, unless you would like to use your mala. So settle on in. Take a comfortable seated position. And let's take three breaths together, inhaling fully and exhaling. Two more breaths, inhaling and exhaling. Last breath, inhaling and exhaling. And closing your eyes, feeling where your body meets your cushion, or you're seated on the earth. And then imagining that you're dropping a column, a grounding column down, width of your hips, down, touching down into the earth. Feeling Mother Earth's grounded support. And seeing yourself in a column of light, surrounded by white light, and golden flecks raining down and through you. And in this space, between the heavens and the earth, we begin taking an inhale. Om Sri Ramaya Namaha. 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 Om Shri 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 Ramaya Namaha. Listening out of the left ear. Asking, what has always been true? How do you experience and inhabit the world? What has been lost? What are you reclaiming? You are living your Dharma, your fullest expression. Imagine yourself living your fullest expression. Breathe in that experience. And breathe it out. and ask for a message from that self. What is the thread? What is your thread? And taking one last breath, inhaling and exhaling. And coming back to an awareness of your body, an awareness of where you're seated on the earth. And slowly opening your eyes if you close them. Coming into an awareness again of your space. And one last breath together. Inhaling here. And exhaling. Stretching, reaching up. And releasing. Take a moment and jot down anything, any questions or experiences, any wisdom that came through for you during our practice. Anything you want to capture of this experience. And then, if you'd like, whenever you're ready, if anyone has any questions or anything they'd like to share, I'll open the line up for that. You can press star 6.
Hi, Rama Devi.
Hi, Kalyani.
Thank you so much for the meditation. It was beautiful, and for sharing your yantra, too. Just beautiful.
Oh, you're so welcome.
I've been doing, well, you know, I've been going through some stuff lately, and so I've been taking this time really working very deeply on myself and and working, it's, you know, it's been a gift to me, and working very hard to try to become aware of my innate wisdom. And I am someone who thinks too much. I intellectualize everything. And I have a very difficult time, maybe discerning isn't the word. I think so much about that thing that I just heard, that thing that just popped into my head. Is that wisdom or is it my monkey brain? And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the antidote to that is, or if you have anything to share from your own experience, since your story sounds so much like my own story, only I'm not as far along it on the path.
You just have a different path, okay? It's not farther less along. Does that make sense?
That's
the first thing. Second of all, I have Ma like screaming in my ear. So for those of you listening, Kalyani and I are in the same yoga tradition. So we've had the same teacher. So two things popped into mind. One, I don't have any more. I'm just going to say them because I find that when I just say what pops in, people relate to it, and I don't have to know the reason that I'm saying it.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with that. So the first thing that popped into mind is there's this story about Mon. I cannot remember which guru bhai it was, who basically said to her, "I think I'm too strong for you. I'm afraid I'm too strong for you." And what she meant was, "I'm afraid my mind is just too strong for this." Okay, so you're not alone in that, I think, is what the message is.
Okay.
It's okay, like, your mind. And the other thing that popped into my head was first thought, best thought. Like, it's not the thought that popped in. It's everything that happens afterwards that's getting you wound up.
What do you mean, everything that happens afterwards?
So it's the analyzing of whether that thought was good enough, whether that thought was intuitive enough, and placing a value on whether, if it was intuitive, then it must be good and right. And if it was my intellect, then it must be bad and flawed.
What an irony, and it's so true.
Yeah. Yeah, so first thought, best thought. Again, I can just hear Ma saying that first thought, best thought. Like, it's okay, leave it at the thought it was, if you can. And the other thing that's coming to me is I heard her teach about intuition and that you don't always know. You do not always, you cannot, at different points on our path, we cannot always know with certainty that it is our intuition versus our ego or our mind or something that's an unaware kind of thought, but or not coming from our highest self. But it's okay because it's just okay. It's just you just take that next step. Like, you can only do what you can do. You know what I mean? And it leads you then to that next piece of intuition. So you can't be wrong, in other words.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. And then I would just add, all three of those were Ma, but personally, I would say in terms of, like, how I get that really, really strong, because I have a really strong mind too, and a cynical mind, really cynical mind. really cynical mind. It's so snarky. It's just so snarky. I distracted myself. I'm sorry. Speed check. I just do a lot of practice. Like, I just do a lot of spiritual practice. I do a lot of mantra practice. I think that's why I love the mantra. I've started out teaching about mantra, saying this before, and that is I love Sanskrit mantra because my mind isn't snarky about it. Like, I don't like affirmations. I don't like prayers. I don't like anything that has to do with my native language or, like, a language that I'm, like, well-versed in. I mean, I'm well-versed in Sanskrit now, obviously, but I mean, I don't want something that makes sense to my logical mind because I will argue with it. Like,
right.
You know, I can't breathe in love and breathe out love because I'm arguing with it about whether or not I'm love.
Right.
You know, that's my mind. And it has calmed down a lot in 15 years of doing this, but not totally. And so I just do a lot of practice. I do a lot of practices. And by which I mean I practice every day to get quiet. And the more I do, the quieter I can get and the longer that can happen, and not just on the meditation cushion.
And you do a chanting 108 of a mantra, and then you just sit and listen.
And then I sit and listen. I do a lot of different practices, Kalyani. I mean, at this point, like, I used to do practices that Swami would give or Ma would give, but then I also now I do what intuitively comes. So in other words, I'll be sitting on the cushion and it'll be like, oh, okay. And I'm like, why am I doing this? I don't know, but I'll do it. But yes, how it started is that I would do either a breath meditation or a mantra meditation every day. And I would choose what it was going to be and I would just do it. And again, it's at different periods of time, it's been a teacher has given me the practice. So I found, you know, and it may be that you want a practice and you want the practice put in front of you and you want to be reminded every day to do the practice. I don't know where you're at with that. But at different times, it's been different things. This period of time for me, yes, I sit out with an intention. I generally have a mantra that I'm practicing at any given time or using at any given time. But when I sit down, who knows what's going to happen? Like, I might do that. I might do something else. But it's intuitively, it springs forward and I do it. So I think, but the practice is the way to quiet the mind.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And if you can get your body moving too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been going to yoga every day.
Yeah,
and,
great.
So that's been really good. It's really helped me with my just sort of this realization that you can only live life in the moment. And,
yeah.
So I've been working on that. I had another question, but I don't want to take up all the discussion time.
All right. Well, let's see if anyone else has a question, and if not, you can come back. Anyone else have a question or reflection? Everyone's good for now. Okay, Kalyani, what's your second question?
Well, and I think that you may understand this since we come from the same spiritual teaching and both having the same guru. I've been only until recently, so I've taken even all this mystical stuff and handled it purely intellectually. You know,
uh-huh.
You know, like I buy the mala and I have it, but I don't use it. And and I've taken yoga teacher training twice, but I don't practice yoga. Those sorts of things, you know, and wanted to soak in as much of Ma as I possibly could without actually taking her lessons and using them. And so now I've come to a point of kind of complete surrender, and saying, you know, maybe I need to do all those things that everyone has been telling me I should be doing, particularly my guru. And so I'm doing that. But there's always been in me this this fear of who will I be if I become enlightened? You know what I mean? Like, what if I see Jesus while I'm sitting and breathing to lose weight, you know, in my bathroom in the cellar? You know, what do I do with that? Is this going to overwhelm me?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does, because I've had one of those experiences where I thought, or it wasn't a thought, it was a fear, a visceral fear of, oh, my God, how am I ever going to live in the world like this?
Right.
I did have one of those experiences. Like, how, right? I mean, after that, the dishes kind of thing. And so you end up getting, I don't know if there's a comprehensive answer for you. I'm not going to purport to have one.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say that you have the experience, and it ends up, what I want to say is it ends up getting grounded into your life. Like you become grounded somehow, like living in your body and on the earth. And I don't know how to explain it, but no, it's not all up there in the ether.
So you can go through periods of feeling imbalance. And then you can then ground it. I guess hearing from your
experience. Yeah, you can have these peak, what do people call them, peak spiritual experiences.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And then you can ground it.
Okay.
Synthesize it. And it's like you're, again, that's another form of integration, that you're then integrating that experience and that wisdom and awareness and that capacity back into your waking life, you know, as a human walking the earth, right? And you start to integrate again and again that being both divine and human, being both spiritual and physical, energetic and physical. And it kind of weaves itself back together piece by piece.
It's helpful.
And that's what the experience, I guess that is somewhat what I was talking about when I said I'd witnessed this experiential phase of integration, where you're actually experiencing what it is to live from with this, looking out almost with a different viewpoint.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And a part of, you know, my path where I am right now is I have been taken away from all those people who would not want me to look at life that way. To integrate those aspects of myself into my work, who were very controlling about how my work should be.
Mm-hmm.
And
poof.
Yes.
They were taken care of.
Yes, they were. Kali is
obstacles moved out of the way. Well, you'll notice, and I don't know that I emphasized this when I was talking about my story, but there are hard stops in my path, in my experience. Hard stops that were not mine, not my choice, what I thought was my choice.
Right.
Hard stops, right? Health, hard stop. Economy, job, hard stop. And I would even say that in this transition from my law practice, my own law practice, into this business, there's been a hard stop. A total going down to zero and then rebuilding again, which was not my plan, right? There was a phase in and phase out plan.
Right.
But the things that you hold on to too long that aren't supposed to be there anymore, they will get moved one way or another if you don't let them go.
Right.
So, yes, it's a boon.
Right.
It's a total boon. You can write it however you want to now. Live it however you want to.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely the truth. I've been trying to pay attention to when I feel like I'm flailing, because when I'm flailing, I'm fighting against the flow.
Yeah. Or you're trying to make something happen. You're not trusting. You're trying to make something happen.
Right.
Right. Or you know, I don't know what you mean by, if this is what you mean by flailing, but my experience with flailing or with clients doing things similar to flailing or having a similar experience is that is manufactured or feigned confusion, or the mind is convincing us that we are confused, that we're not doing something because we don't know what we're supposed to do.
Right.
Even though... Yeah. If we just stopped and took a breath, we would say, oh, well, I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, and this is okay. I'm just uncomfortable with it at the moment because maybe there's not a lot going on. And that the non-doing is much more uncomfortable for us most of the time, for most people that have shared it with me, than the doing.
Yeah.
Most of us are much more comfortable doing something, anything, even if it's the wrong thing, even if it's not really, really productive, then allowing ourselves not to do anything as if that's not, quote, productive. So it's a big challenge. The doing nothing phases or the still phases are typically the two most challenging for folks. Yeah. But they're really fertile.
Right.
Really fertile.
This was perfect.
Okay. Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you so much for being here and for your questions and engagement. And I'll just offer one more time, if there's anyone still here with us live who'd like to share anything or ask any questions. The line is open. Press *6. Okay, so let's wrap up. Thank you so much for being here. I hope that it served you deeply. please feel free to email or post in the Facebook group any questions or reflections you have. It'd be great to continue a dialogue around this. And if you'd like to do deeper work around this, you are invited to join me for the Thread of Dharma Integration Intensive. It's an 8-week immersion in sacred art, sacred sounds, and sacred space to weave all of yourself into your life's work. We'll work with your so we'll take this way of working, we'll take the mantra and the soul yantra, but we'll be working with your personal mantra and your personal soul yantra, intuited and created for you specifically. And we'll be together then for 4 guided explorations and 2 collective conversations, all beginning October 6th. I'm incredibly excited about doing this. The power of this mantra and soul yantra work to kind of slough off everything that's not you and amplify everything that is you, it has been awing and humbling me as I see people work with it. So it really is in that clear resonance of your essential self that all you have to offer is integrated seamlessly and effortlessly. So I'd love to have you. The intensive is full at 9 people, and if it's calling to you, I would love to have you. All the details are at ompreneur.com/integration-intensive. There's a button below the recording. You are listening to the recording, and there's a link in the delivery email. And so if that sounds fun and exciting to you, and you're ready to integrate it all and bring it all, message me, and we'll take it from there. Thank you so much for being here. It was really a gift to bring this to you. Okay. Take care, everyone. Namaste.
Namaste.